Good morning. This is Rob Reed, author of After On and host of the After On podcast, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for June 19th, 2018. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Today is June 19th, Chip. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't know what this is, Steve.
This is Juneteenth, the celebration of the abolition of slavery in Texas in 1865. It's been adopted as the date that we look at for really? The abolition of slavery across the United States.
How wonderful is that?
Isn't that something great to celebrate?
When you think about how far society has moved
mm-hmm.
from the founding of our country to today, it's been incredibly quick. And I know, you know, if you're living, it certainly doesn't feel that way.
Right.
But think about historically on how we're looking at this and how wonderful that every day, you know, we are becoming, I guess, freer or more in control of our future. For the average person,
the freedom in this country is stunning. It is amazing to think how free we are. And today we are a little more free than we were then. So,
all right. Good job, Texas.
Good job, Texas. Leading the way.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got to see a couple of family-based stories. The first one is our favorite superhero family, Incredibles 2.
The best Fantastic Four film, right, Steve?
Yes.
All right. So this was 14 years in the making.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the first one came out, what, 2004?
2004, yes, sir.
Before the movie starts, there is a preview with all the actors and Brad Bird, I think the director, talking about, like, oh, it's been 14 years. Oh, yes, we've been waiting to put this thing on. Basically, not quite an apology, but just like, why are we making this film? And I know many people are saying, why make this film?
Uh-huh.
Well, the first film was very good.
Very good.
Had great music.
Yeah.
Has great style using that 50s look. My goodness, they do it again with this one. Once again, just this Futurama type of look to it.
Okay.
You know, from the 50s. The characters have great styling. You got great voice actors. Beautiful music that just pounds on. So it's got this 50s with the pounding sort of jazz band-ish you know, vibe from the, I should say, big band.
Okay.
Feel from the 60s. And it just hums. This movie just has just a beautiful cadence.
Great.
And it explores, you know, many of the family things that we go through.
Uh-huh.
All the characters return, of course, that we really want. There's a part of it that is very interesting. Mom goes out to work
mm-hmm.
because it becomes a story of public relations. And that is something that we should always be aware of. If the reality is the reality of what it is, or if it is being painted to us, because one of the reasons why the Incredibles or the superheroes in this universe are not around anymore is because they did not have a person advocating for them, painting the view of the world as they would like us to see it.
Hmm.
So we have a public relations firm that kind of takes over, and they want to market Elastigirl. Which is Mrs. Incredible. And so Dad stays at home. And what happens with Dad staying home, Steve?
You get a whole Mr. Mom movie in the middle of this.
Oh, my goodness. He's falling apart.
You fed the baby chili? I love Mr. Mom. God, that was a good movie.
Well, anyway, he's tired. It's not working out. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what we see a lot of the times is, when you initially are a young parent, you're very tired.
Yeah.
In fact, we're going to explore that in a second. But my point is that eventually, you're a thinking human. You start creating a way to kind of work your way out of this. And the story is, Dad doesn't understand new math. They're doing math homework.
Homework is an issue in Dad's world, isn't it?
Yeah, so just like every other world. So how did he combat that? Well, you know, initially he's just exhausted,
mm-hmm.
and the parent and the kids recognize he's exhausted. And they take care of him, but the other part is that he sits down and he reads the text, so he can understand what's going on. And so once he can understand it, he can relay it to his son. Once again, this is a wonderful movie. I don't think anybody is going to go there and not enjoy themselves. The other part I will say is that this movie is timeless, mm-hmm. where a lot of the superhero movies that we've seen this year, while certainly good, they're not made
for repeat viewing.
Yeah, well, they're going to be of their time. Yeah. I don't think that we're going to be watching The Avengers Infinity War 10 years from now with, you know, you watch it with kind of a kish, kind of feel
nostalgia,
to it.
But yeah. this one being a Disney Pixar movie.
It's got a fresh pop to it. There's something really there.
And built to last, yeah, like a lot of the Disney movies.
I would say 70 out of 100.
Nice. That's good. That's good for you to say 70 out of 100.
Yeah, I'm so such a harsh.
That's right. A pretty harsh score. That's right. But you also get to see Tully, which we talked about at our live show at Indie PopCon last weekend.
Kyle Hickman, mm-hmm. When we were listing our favorite movies of the year so far, mm-hmm. this was Kyle's favorite movie. And I saw it was playing, so I went to see this film, and I understand why he said it's his favorite film. Now, I still think A Quiet Place ranks higher, but, okay. you know, that's just subjective viewing. If you're an adult and a thinking adult and you want to go see a movie, this would be a very interesting movie. They purposely do not reveal too much of the movie. So I'm going to try to kind of review this mm-hmm. to kind of give you an idea. This is a mom. A three. She's got a special needs child. She's got autism. If you remember back when we had young children.
Yes.
Steve, sleep was mm-hmm. a premium. We were always, you know, moms are kind of frazzled. Dads are kind of frazzled. What do you want? You went from your 20s where you kind of can play around to all of a sudden you've got responsibility. And that responsibility is real important.
And every moment. There's no down moment.
Exactly. Well, there's, you know, at 11 o'clock when they finally pass out yeah, or whatever
maybe.
It is.
Maybe.
Okay. Clothes are getting washed, but they're not being washed like you used to. Your resources are stretched. You're frazzled. I mean, that's exactly what we're finding here. Now, we can always compare ourselves to the alpha mom mm-hmm. who's out there, who always has... everything. The meatloaf is done just right. In fact, I'm thinking of Julianne Moore's movie from a few years ago. I think the Virginia Woolf one, where she's the mom who can't make the upside down cake, and she's the mom who can't make the lime jello with the tuna fish. Yeah, you know, she's just feeling like she's failing as a person, mm-hmm. and that was kind of an exploration of that. This is a person. Tully's a person, or the movie is about a mom who's. Just, you know, out of control. What really needs to happen is, you know, grandma and grandpa come for the weekend and mm-hmm. just say, hey, listen, you sleep.
Go rest.
Yeah, and then come back with a refresh. But she's got no break on this. And then, once again, having a special needs child.
Adds to that, yeah.
Really kind of puts things in, you know, you just, once again, frazzled. Mm-hmm. There's just no downtime for her. So, she deals with the school. The mom's dealing with the school about her son. When I say doublespeak, that's a good way of saying it, you know, code, like your son's unique, you're mm-hmm. special, we love your son. What they're really saying is your son's incredibly disruptive to our ability to work with all the other students.
Right.
And because he's so disruptive, please find another place for him. But, you know, they're not saying that. So there's another part of just not, you know, this bless your heart sort of southern way of saying, listen, just get away from here. So what ends up happening is we have this Mary Poppins type of a character pop in. Not for the kids, but for mom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the story, is Mary Poppins shows up, and all of a sudden everything gets better. The cupcakes get made, Steve. Dinner is on. Not only it's a dinner, but it's a nutritious dinner that's being thought of and thoughtful. Kids are happy. Dad's happy. But the deal is Dad's kind of checked out. He's not really seeing what's going on. So the story really aims at how does this Mary Poppins character work with Mom? And then sort of what ends up happening. And if I give away too much, you're really kind of missing out mm-hmm. on the exploration of this film. This is a really good film. I would recommend this to any person who is of adult age and maybe has experienced this.
Maybe those of us who have gone through that young child age and gone into the teenage years, maybe you don't want to see this when you're actually in the middle of it.
Well, unless you're looking for an affirmation that this is part of what happens.
Okay.
And you're not alone.
There you go.
So, Steve, you got to go to the movies too this week.
Yes, we did. My wife and I, for our anniversary, went to a movie. We went to go see
Ocean's 8. Was it a matinee, Steve?
It was a Friday afternoon matinee because we're teachers. We got nothing better to do. So Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock, we went to the movie theater, and we were the youngest people in the movie theater to see Ocean's 8.
That says a lot about Ocean's 8, Steve.
Well, obviously, it's a remake of a movie from the 60s.
It's got a demographic it's going for,
Steve. It definitely has a demographic, and boy, did it hit that demographic. These young people of retirement age really enjoyed this
film. What do you mean,
film.
These people, Steve?
We were the youngest people in the theater, and adorable grandmas and grandpas loved this movie.
A lot of white tennis shoes, Steve. A lot of white tennis
shoes. A lot of comfortable white tennis shoes and a lot of blankets. There were a lot of jackets. It was very cold in the movie theater in the northern part of our country. Ocean's 8 is a fine, fine film. This is a heist movie in the
Stars
Ocean's
America's
series.
Sweetheart, Steve.
That's right. Sandra Bullock is in this. Very dramatic role for her. Very not comedic.
Really?
Most of her roles have a comedic bent. This is a very dramatic part for her. I really love this movie. This movie draws the audience into the story very well. The characters in this are so well drawn. You know these characters as well as you need to know them for this heist by the end of this film. They're very secretive. Okay. You know, that's how a heist works. You're not supposed to know everything about all the characters in your gang. And we know enough about all of them to fall in love with them and to care deeply about them. It really draws the audience into the adventure. I really felt like I was a part of this heist. Like, I was needing
But you were not going to get wealthy with this one, Steve.
Well, no. I was probably
In your heart.
I was probably that character who gets cut out by the end. But I really enjoyed the adventure of this. The music is fantastic. The acting is wonderful. The actors in this, it's all female cast. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, stunning, funny characters in this movie. Rihanna is really amazing in this. Okay. She is very well hidden. The film very carefully makes her secretly gorgeous, and then in the course of the heist, she's revealed as this gorgeous creature. But boy, does she have some great acting chops, too.
Wonderful.
I really suggest this one.
That's not all you saw, Steve.
No, I was finally able to have some time and to calm my lifestyle down enough to go to the movie theater to see some of our Fathom events.
Oh, really?
I love what Fathom Events is putting down.
So what did you see?
This week, Riff Tracks was in theaters with one of my favorite MST3K episodes. This is Space Mutiny from 1988. This is a...
I don't even remember this film.
Oh, this is one that I've seen probably 20 times. This is one of my favorite MST3K episodes. It is a South African space adventure.
Well, you got me with that, Steve.
With a lot of footage from Battlestar Galactica, because they couldn't afford to actually do any special effects. They just stole the Battlestar Galactica special effects and just pasted them in.
Why not?
And the actors are reacting to nothing, and their reactions are terrible. They're under attack. The ship is under attack, and the actors are saying, "Oh, look at that." This is a terrible movie, but I love it. I love watching this movie. The Riff Tracks guys did a whole new riff to this. Okay. All new jokes. They did not repeat anything, with the very small exception of they made a list of nicknames for David Ryder, the main character of this movie. Now, in the original MST3K episode, the list of names for David Ryder was a lengthy list. This is code that we speak of when MST3K fans get together. We use names like Bolt, Vanderhuge, Lump, Beef Broth, Butch, Deadlift.
These are how they just call to him.
This is just because silly names.
He's a tough guy,
he's
Steve.
He's a big, muscular lunkhead. And so the nicknames are in there. That's just about the only thing. I have to say, I did not love this rendition of this movie.
Okay.
As much as I love
Steve
the original.
Steve's seen so many that he's been willing to rank them.
As much as I love the original, this one paled in comparison. The jokes did not hit the same funny bone as the original, I was a little frustrated at how often my head was giving the jokes from the original, and the guys were very clearly...
That's the deal. Well, he remembered them.
I think everybody in the theater knew these jokes, but the guys were very clearly driving around those jokes to do something else.
All right. Well, this was brought to you through Fathom Events, and they have a whole list of summer programming.
Oh, boy. So many great things. And tonight is the replay of this movie, so you can go to your local theater tonight and see Space Mutiny from Riff Tracks.
That's not all, Steve. You got to see something else from Fathom Events.
Yes. Fathom Events also this week brought out the Doctor Who episode, Genesis of the Daleks. This is the 1975, quite possibly the best of the classic Doctor Who episodes.
Of course, Steve. Everyone knows that.
This one is about fascism. This one is about finding a group of people who are taking over an area and fighting. This is very much a World War II sort of story in 1975, talking about, well, it's Cold War too. There's a Cold War element to it as well. But this is one of the most treasured episodes of Doctor Who. And they restored it and brought it back to the theaters and had a special piece from Tom Baker, the fourth Doctor, the one that you know. The one with the scarf,
yeah, Steve.
The one that you know. He is,
of course. We all know that.
He's adorable and 84 years old. And he was a part of this production. He gave a little extra to this episode that we got to see in theaters this week.
Excellent.
It's so great to be able to go to theaters and see something, to be a part of a community. The community of people who went to see the Riff Tracks, those are my friends. The people who go to see the Doctor Who, that's another group of my friends, and some of them are the same people.
All right, so with this, will this eventually show up elsewhere?
Yes, this rendition of this will be released on Blu-ray.
Okay.
The whole Tom Baker season is being released on Blu-ray. This was like the commercial for that release.
They restored the entire season.
The entire season is coming out.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty exciting. Speaking of exciting, one of your favorite movies has a sequel that's coming out this week. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is hitting theaters this week.
Now, I loved the first movie,
yes,
the Steven Spielberg movie. I was taking calculus that summer. And basically, I left my class exam, and I headed over with a group of students, and we all went to see Jurassic Park that day. And I liked it so much, I ended up reading the book, which is a different book than the movie.
Yes.
And every movie since then has been a paling disappointment, because I think they take the story in the wrong direction. But anyway, we're going to see dinosaurs. We're going to see made-up dinosaurs.
We're going to see Chris Pratt. Right? That's all I need.
Well... All right. Well, anyway, there's going to be exploding volcano, Steve, and there's going to be some dinosaurs running, and there's going to be a story around it, and it's going to be the big film for this week. I will see this film. I'll see it because I enjoy what this is able to do. The music's just beautiful. The story has a lot to it, but I tell you, I just think they just took it in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The movie in your head, the wish that you have from that Michael Crichton novel to be made into a movie.
The answer to Jurassic Park was that life finds a way, and they just escape, and they eventually arrive on Central America. And they just start moving their way up to North America and to South America. And it's just that life escapes. And we're all of a sudden you got dinosaurs and humans fighting for space.
And we're working on this right now in science, right? Where the Woolly Mammoth Project is happening. They are going to make a woolly mammoth very soon here.
Well, that's true up in Siberia. They still find meat. Anyway, there's a lot of stories on that. We'll never bring back dinosaurs like this.
Okay.
But...
Say never.
All right, I say never. Anyway, this is I'll end up seeing this, but there's so many other good movies this week.
Yeah.
Let's go through those, because these are the ones I really want to see.
Yeah, my pick of the week is Boundaries. This I hadn't heard about this one until you put it into the rundown for the show, but this is an all-star family road trip movie with a drug-smuggling twist.
This is sort of Road to Bountiful with Grandpa.
And drugs.
And drugs.
This one features Christopher Plummer, Christopher Lloyd, Peter Fonda, and Kristen Schaal. This is my pick of the week. I really want to see this movie.
This looks like a very good film, much maybe like Boyhood last year, something like that, where there's a story that's it's kind of lower key, a little humor, a little dramedy going on,
a little ridiculousness. There's quite a ridiculous situation that happens in this trailer. The Boundaries seems to be a good movie.
This looks great.
There is a movie based on a true story that's coming out this week called The Catcher Was a Spy. This is a real-life story about a baseball player named Mo Berg who became a spy for the Allies in World War II.
This is based on a true story. Mm-hmm. This looks really good. Mm-hmm. I look forward to seeing this. And once again, we got baseball, we got a spy network.
How more American and summer could we get?
Well, I look forward to seeing this. Once again, we've got this big movie, but we have these are two very capable films.
Mm-hmm. There is a third film called Under the Silver Lake that's coming out this week. This one features Andrew Garfield and Topher Grace. This is a weird trailer. I am not clear on what exactly is happening in this. There's a young lady, and Andrew Garfield's character meets her and falls for her, and then she disappears.
Like, truly disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wasn't living in this unit.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, we have Peter Parker, not a Spider-Man.
Right.
And he is starring in this film, Steve.
Uh-huh.
And then we have Venom also starring in the film.
The other Venom, not the new Venom, because, boy, I'm still not sold on the new Venom.
Who knows? Who knows? But anyway, Peter Parker, this is going to be a really interesting story. I don't think he's going to show up in a Spider-Man character, Steve.
No, probably not. He's probably got it on under the rest of his costume, though.
Probably.
That's how that works.
I would assume that's how it kind of works.
That's the greatest American hero story.
Once again, the story is a young man sees this beautiful lady out in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
They have an encounter.
A moment.
Anyway, everything seems to be popping. It wakes up the next morning, and it's as if she was never there.
Mm-hmm.
So the story, the mystery begins.
You really need to click on this trailer, because I am not sure what happens after that. It is very interesting imagery after that.
Book it. Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. We had a fantastic conversation with Ben Nichols last weekend in Indianapolis.
We did. And I think our listeners are going to enjoy this.
Yeah, except for the audio.
Well, we did our best.
The audio is not up to studio par. We were in a different place, in a different situation, but the conversation is so good. I think you'll enjoy this.
Until we have the resources of NPR, Steve, I think we'll have to just kind of work with some of these things sometimes.
Yeah, it's fine.
Our guest today is Benjamin Nichol, Chief Executive Officer for the Phi Kappa Psi Foundation, which has been established to foster the development of leaders and promote academic excellence in higher education. We accomplish our mission by raising, investing, and granting funds for the benefit of Phi Kappa Psi. Our topic today is using books to help employees better understand a firm's mission and messaging. The hopes are to create a more enlightened and self-aware staff and who can better meet the needs of their supporters. Welcome, Ben.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us in your lovely building. This is fantastic.
All right, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your first memories reading, and what did you like to read?
Yeah, first memories reading. I remember reading with my parents those kind of sounding books about animals and small things. And I would say when I was growing up, I don't know if you recall, but Berenstain Bears were the story of choice at that point. And I think over the years, I've just found myself, short stories have always been intriguing for me. And now in later years, I'm really interested in I think what folks would say are self-help books or business orientation books in particular. And then I love to pick up magazines, and it doesn't matter the topic. I will read the trashiest to the most scientific. The broader the spectrum, the better.
So tell us why you use books to communicate ideas to your staff instead of just telling them things.
Yeah, I think I found that telling staff is perhaps more hierarchical than folks learning on their own or learning from others. I learned a long time ago that paying a consultant to say what you say has a dramatic effect, and I've found that books are a cheaper way than a consultant for staff to learn things, and then learning on your own. I think that that's fascinating to watch individuals as they read or listen to books to see the transformation through themselves.
How do you end up choosing the books that you use?
You know, over the years, I've found different ways to choose different texts. More recently, it's asking individuals on the team where they think we should be moving. So asking them for some input based on what on other texts that we've read in the past. And then certainly, I think just being aware of top 10 books and then other folks that I'm surrounded by.
What is your favorite book that you've passed along to your staff?
Yeah, my favorite book is The Fred Factor by Mark Sanborn, and it's a book particularly about a postman, and he just exudes everything that's genuine and good about serving in that role and goes over the top. He has several core messages in the text. One of them is everyone makes a difference, and I think that that's a pretty profound statement. He talks about everything in life is built on relationships and the importance of relationships. He suggests that you must always create value for people and that value does not need to cost money and money does not need to be transacted in creating value. And then he says that you can reinvent yourself regularly. And I think if we were to follow those four tenets as individuals and as people, the world would be a better place. So it's a fascinating, really short read. I call it a toilet or a nighttime read. So the opportunity that you can read it in one sitting, it's pretty quick and digestible. But I think above all, it speaks to those important components.
So have the ideas in the books you selected changed from when you first started choosing books?
They have, and much of that is the evolution of the team here that I lead for the organization. So we had a much smaller team at that point, and so books perhaps were more directed about individuals and rather than team influence or connectivity, and we've slowly changed that over time. And over time, we've also found that a lot of the books have a lot to do with life balance, and I truly believe that's a byproduct of the culture in which we're working and living in. And so I see that I would suggest over time that the texts we choose will acquiesce to how times change with that team and how the team grows.
So based on our conversations, I did read Danny Meyer's Setting the Table, The Transforming Power of Hospitality in Business. Danny is a successful restaurateur. Why did you choose this book?
Shake Shack. Let's be frank. Everybody loves the Shake Shack. Everyone wants a shake and a burger. And so I often choose wine and books by their cover, and this one happened to be because I love chocolate milkshakes and I love burgers, so I thought that was a great influence, but more so because I loved the concept of the brands that he started. The book itself, I think, is a slow read when you first start, but the middle section and the back portion of the book really speak to the value that someone can bring, particularly to hospitality and to any industry.
In fact, that's what I got from it. The first one was like his background. Nobody really cared. I mean, we cared a little bit, but like two-thirds of it, you're like, why?
It's an autobiography of some to start with, I think.
And then you get to this the last few chapters, and all of a sudden you're just like, oh my goodness, about taking the opportunities to address the individuals who you would come in contact with, plugging yourself into the community, recognizing that the stresses of the moment, because one of the things he talked about is 9/11 and how he's a restaurateur, and Broadway shows were shutting down, restaurants were closing down, and he said, I had a choice. I could do this out of fear, or I could come in and do the best I could to take care of my staff. And I just tell you, he just did a marvelous job. And I absolutely am so glad that you put this book as part of your staff's reading. And because I learned a tremendous amount from this too. So thank you for that. Yeah. As part of our list, we have three books from Patrick Lencioni. Tell us about him and his books.
Yeah, if you've ever seen Patrick, he's a well-known motivational speaker and has a number of books. Our team has read three or four now. I think most notably folks would suggest Death by Meeting is one of the texts we read, and that was extremely helpful for our team. It really suggests that meetings have to have a purpose, a defined purpose, intentionality around them. And he was finding that it was very common in business orientation where folks would meet to meet and you'd have another meeting for another meeting, but there was no real purpose. And so it was helpful for our team. We have restructured all of our meetings around this. We have moved the time in the meetings, who's running the meetings, all different types of things based on that. So that was a great text to read.
Do you find you have fewer meetings because of that?
We do have fewer meetings. They're much shorter, defined agenda. The times are probably less convenient for folks. So okay. We'll force meetings earlier in the morning or perhaps later in the afternoon, and doing that purposefully because uh-huh. people don't want to stay later or come in earlier. So you're more focused, and less meetings because we will group meetings around strategy at defined periods of time throughout the year, mm-hmm. and we'll have quick check-ins. We were finding often that the beginning of every meeting was kind of a come together. How was your weekend? What were you doing? And that was the first 10 or 15 minutes. And so by restructuring the types of meetings and the kind, we kind of eliminated that portion of it. So very powerful tool. Getting Naked was another book, and that's fascinating both by the title itself, sure. And just the general concept behind the book, which is to be vulnerable as an individual.
It would be a good name for wine, too.
It would be. I can think of many other things it would be a good name for, too.
So you said about getting vulnerable. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it speaks to vulnerability. It also speaks a lot, I think, to the client relationship, so mm-hmm. consumer and client, and that in some cases we're often attracted to money or clients or business, and in some cases that relationship is not meant for both parties. So just like other things in our life, we need to both choose. So both the individual who's on the receiving end of that and the person that's giving. And so that was a great text for us and for our team, particularly as we work with donors, mm-hmm. to make sure that as we're talking with them, we're being conscious because they're parting with a valuable resource.
Sure.
One, their time, and two, their financial resources. And both of those are what I would say are two of the most precious things that we have to give at this point.
On that same note, and this may not be part of the book, what I have really come to realize is that the person that can go and, I say, hunt down this person may not be the proper person to manage the relationship once it's established.
Okay.
They're different skill sets. You know, there's this driver who can go out and just put that person together. And then, you know, as far as the manager, it's, you know, the teacher in us, the person who's a psychologist. There's just something there that makes everyone feel valuable, and it just becomes that team sort of process there. How wonderful. Any other thoughts on those?
Yeah, the other one that our team read, which I think is a great text for groups to read, is The Five Dysfunctions of a Team.
Okay.
And that really helps you define areas or disbeliefs that folks have on how teams are generated or how they work together. And so okay. That's another one that was helpful for us.
Wonderful.
I love having these conversations where I just get a list of books. We've talked to so many wonderful people that have given me such a long list of books that I need to seek out. This is a fantastic list. You have retreats where your staff discusses these books and the ideas of the writings that you've selected. How does that work?
Yeah, we have structured ourselves based off of the Death by Meeting concept to have three strategic retreats per year. And at each of those, we review one of the team texts that we've read and usually coincide with some other things. But I found that the retreats are an opportunity to dive deeper into a book, to go offsite, to really allow folks to share that experience.
Okay.
And so some of it is intentional around business. You know, we're spending time strategically on the organization and outcomes we have, but then spending some time on the team texts, which are somewhat introspective, I believe, and help okay. the team grow. And that's been a valuable experience for us.
Do you experience a closer team because of those types of discussion?
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, there's a point in time with a team where you go through those stages, and I forget all of them, but from norming to storming to performing, and I think at that point when you're discussing some of the text,
sure.
there is an opportunity for folks to share things they wouldn't otherwise share, and that brings the group closer together and allows others to share in what you've created as maybe some would say a safe space.
Sure.
And that's brought our team much closer together.
And let me add about that. What's the difference between going to a retreat with a small group of people and going to a retreat with a larger group? I mean, tell me a little bit about those dynamics and maybe how they're different.
Yeah, I think they can both be valuable, but I have found that with us, sometimes there's the need to break off in smaller groups where you can get to know each other more and maybe report back to the larger group. And some of that is just the exposure or the time that you have to connect with one another one-on-one. But I think a combination of both of them is necessary. You know, sometimes I think in small groups, some folks feel forced to share. And I have found in my experience that we are, society suggests that everyone must share. Mm-hmm. And I'm a believer that people should share, but only share at their own pace at the right time. And so sometimes the larger group is good because the folks that want to share can and can show by example. And in a smaller group, folks who maybe wouldn't otherwise feel comfortable can share in those times.
How would you suggest that other leaders use books to relay their messaging to their staff?
I think it, like I said in the beginning, I think it emphasizes the message that you want to get across. It allows others to think outside their experience. It exposes them to other things. So if there's an issue or an area or something that you want to energize your team around or bring them together, I think team texts are a way that someone else can convey that message or force your team to think outside the box, maybe that third level of thinking.
That's fantastic.
Our listeners can find out more about Ben Nickel and his work by visiting the pkpfoundation.org. You can also find a list of some of the books Ben uses in our show notes at toomuchscrolling.com and on our Facebook page underneath the link to this episode. Thank you so much, Ben.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Scroll with it.
I want to tell you a boring story.
A boring story, Steve?
Yes, there's a boring story out of Chicago this week. Elon Musk.
That guy that just got hammered by his shareholders, didn't he?
Yeah, he's our Iron Man. He's our Tony Stark in so many ways. And he's come to Chicago this week and talked to Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and he is proposing putting in a Hyperloop from O'Hare to downtown, and he says he can do it in 3 years, and it would take 12 minutes to take this vehicle from O'Hare to downtown.
Imagine what that could do. Mm-hmm. Imagine what that could do to Chicago traffic. I think this is incredible. This is a good example of, I didn't say we have to do it, but this is a good thing to consider. When we start looking at the future, we've got to start thinking out 20, 30, 50, 100 years from now on how we want to work around the amount of population that comes to these centers is getting crazier and crazier. And using something like this tool that can bore a hole, the boring company, to put together an underground train or something that could take you from O'Hare to downtown in 12 minutes, that's maybe a good thing to consider.
It could change everything about travel in that direction from O'Hare to downtown.
Sure.
That could take an hour in traffic right now.
Oh, yes, because you never know where the traffic hits you. You exit O'Hare, head downtown. You know, is it Cumberland that you get hit at? Or do you go down to Harlem? Oh. Or is it later? And then all of a sudden you're at a standstill. Mm-hmm. And this could be any time during the day.
And in the times that you would not expect. In the midday, sometimes there's traffic there.
Well, how about coming back and it's 9 or 10 o'clock at night and the traffic exiting the city is still there.
Uh-huh.
So this is, Chicago is not unique in this as traffic issues, but we really are at a point where if we're going to start thinking about infrastructure and how to look at these things, these are more than patches that we need to be considering. We need to be dramatically rethinking on how we use our transportation, especially public transportation. So, and we are a very big public transportation area in Chicago, as New York is. I mean, many of the big cities are.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing to keep an eye on. Even more interesting, though, Chip, even more interesting than the boring story is Weird Al Yankovic. He wrapped up his ridiculously self-indulgent, ill-advised vanity tour this week, and...
Of course he did, Steve.
And...
What?
He released a 27-minute long mix of all 77 cover songs that he did on that tour. Every night of that tour, 77 different nights, the band played a different cover song.
Well, Steve, that is absolutely amazing.
It is amazing.
I think that...
musically speaking,
You're not a musician, but you understand music. You understand how difficult it is to play 77 different kinds of music on 77 different nights. These are musicians that I admire so much. So much.
Steve, I was in Nashville once where you'd go up to the live band and you would tell them the song that you wanted to sing, and it was live karaoke.
Wow.
So I know musicians know songs, that's but amazing. Imagine having this catalog in your head, or it's like, bring it up so I can, and I'll finger it while we're sitting there looking at the notes. So yes, this I'm assuming that he has capable musicians on this. This sounds like a wonderful, fun type of play with his concert series.
Remember, this band has been together for 35 years. This is the same musicians that Weird Al's been using since the beginning of his career. Yes. They are stunning musicians. And
they play polka music, Steve.
They play the polkas. This is not exactly a polka, but it kind of comes out as a polka because it's a mix of 77 different songs. Here's the thing, Chip.
Yes.
Weird Al took all of the audio from all 77 of these concerts, and he is going to release them perfectly mastered on Stitcher Premium this Sunday.
Well, people are just going to be waiting with bated breath, Steve. I don't know how they can stand themselves.
suffice it to say, I have now subscribed to Stitcher Premium.
Well, there's one. There's one, Steve.
Oh, come on now. He sold out every one of these concerts across the country.
I'm just kind of playing with you. But I'm glad that this is sort of like the Grateful Dead. Only different, Steve. Only different.
Only very different.
Somebody did a miracle, and Steve got his miracle.
No kidding. Because at $4.99 a month, I'm going to listen to this for a couple of months before I get through all 77 concerts. I might pay for the whole year. The whole year is $34.99. And would I pay $34.99 to see Weird Al in concert? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I would.
Yes, you would.
So the question that I have for you is, does this mark the end of real media? Does this mark the end of downloading music? Are we living in a streaming only lifestyle now?
The real challenge what we're dealing with right now is, if you're an unknown band, how do you get someone to notice you?
Right.
And in the old days, you would buy a song. And when Apple Music first came on the scene,
old days, we heard the songs on the radio because they were being played on the radio.
Exactly. But we had payola scandals and all sorts of things going on. But you'd still go out and buy the single.
Mm-hmm.
Then we, in the 70s, we had albums. But if we brought it up to when iTunes first was released, iTunes put a lot of effort in cultivating bands and music. And I went through, I bet I spent $1,000 in music over the course of a couple of years because I rediscovered my love of music. And there's this whole group of bands out there that I was not aware of. There was no way for me to become aware of those that all of a sudden I got to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they abandoned that model and they've gone through what Spotify has, the subscription model. So, yes, there's this whole backlog of music that I'm aware of, but how do new bands really get part of that stream?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I will tell you is, I was just down at the beach in North Carolina, and there is if you want to look up this radio station, it's called The Penguin. And it's called, it's Music's of a Different Feather or something of that nature.
Nice.
And they have, basically they did what WHSF did up in the D.C. area before they abandoned it. The Penguin went to live DJs picking their own set list. And this is a really good station. This was aimed at Gen Xers. I can tell you that's who it's aimed at.
Okay.
Because you would have Bob Marley mixed in with Sublime, and all of a sudden you have some new music mixed in with some old music, but you would get just this really eclectic mix, and it really is a mixtape that the DJs are putting on, and it was just a guy who said, "Listen, we should have better radio," so. It's going to be interesting. We don't have a station like that here in Chicago.
All of the stations have gone to a computer format.
But we are big enough
mm-hmm.
that we could have a very powerful station like this. And I think that the music industry is ripe to kind of play around with this, because there are a lot of people. I mean, think about club music. the dance music. You know, they're really talented DJs to put that together. That's different than radio DJs who are, you know, you want to have enough repetition that the songs are not unknown and that, you know, your favorite song keeps coming back. But you also want enough flavor that you're not listening to the same thing all the time, and it's creating a nice mix, and it's kind of playful, and it challenges it a little bit. And that's what great musicians do. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that's what great DJs do with their stations. So Spotify and Apple Music is a great place to grab old music. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's a great place to explore new music.
And Stitcher Premium is a great place to explore my Weird Al obsession.
Well, you enjoy that,
Stan. I will. Oh, believe me, I will. you might hear it from your house. I might have it on so loud.
Well, we only can dream, Steve.
I think, Chip, I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think so. We got some great plans for next week. Oh, boy, summer is upon us. We've got some great stuff coming up, so tune in next week. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS if you want to communicate something. Tell us how much you love Weird Al. Or anything else. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future.